DW.
So if we were to walk up to that fence there with a Geiger counter, would we still get some kind of...
You will probably get some readings, yes.
Maybe here where we're standing?
At one time it used to be. I don't know now.
Larry King lives across the road from an old uranium mine, and he worked for 7 years in a different one a few miles up the road.
I started working up there right after high school, October of 1975, after graduating.
Between 1944 and 1986, nearly 30 million tons of uranium were extracted from Navajo land. There are more than 500 abandoned mine sites across Navajo lands, an area about the size of Belgium and the Netherlands. Perhaps the worst single event was the Church Rock spill, when millions of gallons of acidic radioactive tailings flowed into the waterways here when a dam burst.
Well, it's just a big old hole in the dike, that's all I can say, because I just passed it. I didn't stop to look at it, just like any break in a dam. That's what it looked like.
But the danger was real.
The radiological assaults got the big attention. But if you were in that river when the spill liquids came down, as a number of local people were, you were burned by the acids. Because that wastewater that came out of that mill and tailings had a pH of battery acid. To this day, we really don't know how many people were acutely affected with burns to their feet, ankles, legs, lower extremities from that exposure.
Chris Shuey is with the Southwest Information and Research Center, a non-profit that's been looking into the health effects of uranium mining. He says the Church Rock spill was terrible, but the issue goes well beyond a single event.
So here we are in 2016, more than 30 years after really the end of the major production period of uranium, at least in the United States, and we are still trying to assess the effects on the populations. Clearly, the underground miners were affected by their exposure to radon and radon progeny, along with a number of other things in the mines, the dust, the diesel fumes, and things like that. Underground uranium miners have a 3 to 5-fold excess lung cancer incidence.
Larry King says his career was bad for his health.
When I see an obituary in a newspaper, or sometimes there'll be a photo attached, and then I'd say, I remember this dude. I remember this guy working. Or they would request for all their contribution be donated to the Lung Cancer Association.
Have you felt any health effects yourself, you believe?
I have respiratory problems. And so the only thing they labeled me was with asthma. Mm-hmm. I get fatigue a lot. I got high blood pressure. But I take medication for that. Mm-hmm. So I was right there, right next to the miners, mm-hmm. all the time. And so I went through areas of the mine area with where there's no ventilation, breathing all the dust, the diesel smoke. And sometimes when I get back to the surface and I look at myself, the only thing I wear sometimes is the goggles, clear goggles. You take them off and the rest of your face is black except your...
There is a federal compensation scheme for uranium mine workers, but it only applies to those who worked before 1971, so Larry King is left out. So too is anyone who just happens to live nearby, and Chris Shuey says there's mounting evidence that mines make bad neighbours.
We found that proximity is a strong predictor of contributions to high blood pressure, kidney disease, and autoimmunity. The continuing research that our colleagues over here at UNM are doing are clearly finding that there are markers of autoimmunity, of diminished immune function, immune dysfunction is the term they often use, that are clearly showing a relationship to uranium exposure in blood and urine samples.
Of course, it is possible to sue, but that's expensive, time-consuming, often exhausting, and cause and effect is often very tricky to prove in any legal sense. Indeed, previous attempts haven't resulted in large payouts. The Environmental Protection Agency is attempting to force a clean-up, belatedly, even by its own admission. Clancy Tenley is from the EPA.
When the mining was done, there were not any federal laws or regulations
that required the mining companies to do cleanup. So there was nothing in place, as it should have been, that would require a company, after they conduct the mining, to clean it up right then and there. So that didn't happen.
Now they're using Superfund legislation, which allows them to go after the companies responsible. Often those companies have folded or been absorbed into larger companies, so it allows the government to go after them too, and to require that they assess the damage and clean it up. But it's a slow, complicated process, especially at places like Redwater Pond, a small community surrounded by two disused mines.
Both mines are referred to as Northeast Church Rock.
That's Edith Hood, a long-time resident.
I don't know, but I think it's a desecration of Mother Earth, because, Navajos feel that Mother Earth is human, just like us. And this is what they did to it, to her.
She says the cleanup so far has only tinkered around the edges. And what's more, locals are often required to move into town while the cleanup is going on, something that could take over a decade when the companies responsible finally get around to the largest jobs. And the companies responsible often keep a close eye on the cost. Chris Shuey again.
When it comes to the time of crafting a remedy, you're going to clean this up, or you're going to reduce the risk, and you're going to do it, and you'll have a couple of different choices on how you do it, but you're going to meet this standard and do it. It's only the EPA and the responsible party that get to come and sit at this table and agree to that. The community, which is affected, is not in the room. They have no legal standing to be at that table. So if EPA, for instance, is giving up too much to GE during the negotiation, because that's what it is, it's a negotiation. You can talk all you want to about how science is driving this decision and that decision. It's really not that way. It's what is achievable in a negotiation between government and industry without the presence of the affected community.
Clancy Tenley is still optimistic. He's confident that a good solution can be found.
No, it's not beyond our ability. It is more expensive to clean up a mine than it was to mine it in the first place. So it's a really large task, given the large number of mines, the remoteness of some of them. Some are in very difficult terrain, steep mountainous areas. It's a very large area. Navajo Nation's the same size as the state of West Virginia, and the mines are somewhat spread out throughout the reservation. So it's a very challenging task, and it will take a good long time to do it, but it can be done.
Many people in this community aren't convinced. They think there's more than a hint of discrimination at work. The Three Mile Island disaster happened 3 months before the Church Rock spill, something that hasn't gone unnoticed.
Here we're dealing with it, and here they fixed it within so many months, maybe a year, and we're still dealing with this after, 35 years. So that, I think that comes into play. There's nobody out there. It doesn't need to be clean, but there's people living out here, you know. So it comes to discrimination, injustice, racism, you know. That all came into the picture.
Have you ever considered just leaving?
Culturally, like we said, we're tied to the land. So we regard this as, you know, our birthplace. And when children are born, their umbilical cords are buried there in the prayer that they say, you'll always come back to where you come from, you know. And burial sites are here. So that's why people don't want to leave. I don't want to leave.
This report was brought to you by DW.